A click, click, click of heels on marble echoed through the vast lobby at intervals, as women in charcoal pantsuits and men in dark suits and white shirts slipped through electronically controlled glass security chambers and crossed before a reception desk. The passing Exxon executives politely acknowledged the uniformed guards, who replied in turn with a formal Mr. or Ms. The corporation's new campus, in the featureless ex-urban city of Irving, resembled a high-end condominium community or a prosperous modern college set amid pine trees, wind-bent mesquite trees, and green lawns. Breezes rippled a small man-made lake. The main building was of modest height and sleekly constructed from granite, smoked glass, and polished marble. On one side of the lobby rose a tall, photorealistic oil painting of a pristine alpine village on a lake with snow-capped mountains in the distance. Opposite was an equally large canvas depicting a desert canyon. Visitors killed time in square-backed leather club chairs beneath the paintings. The aesthetic suggested a Four Seasons hotel without many guests. A second wall of security-controlled glass doors awaited visitors entering the top floor. There, it was necessary to pass into a second security lobby and wait for the doors behind to close before access to the inner executive suite, known to employees as the God Pod, would be granted. The God Pod contained about 20,000 square feet of office space housing just 4 or 5 executive suites, including Lee Raymond's, as well as conference rooms. Inside, it sometimes felt as if a neutron bomb had recently detonated, killing off the local population but leaving the elegant physical facilities fully intact. The persistent quiet and formality of the headquarters building had an ominous quality. Some employees referred to Irving as the Death Star. Until its retreat to Texas in 1993, Exxon had been rooted in Manhattan since 1885, when John D. Rockefeller and his founding partners at Standard Oil of Ohio had moved their headquarters from the city of Cleveland to 26 Broadway. The son of a traveling elixir salesman, Rockefeller had rebelled against his father's example by following his frugal mother's advice and growing up to become disciplined, orderly, circumspect, earnest, and religiously devout. As American oil consumption boomed in the late 19th century, he and his partners methodically seized control of the industry, destroyed their competitors, innovated with technology, and built the first integrated oil company, meaning that they controlled the profitable exploitation of oil from the wellhead through the refining process to the retail sale of gasoline. At its peak, Standard Oil controlled 90% of the American oil market. From its early days, it attracted the same kind of opposition that would shadow Exxon a century later. Muckrakers, journalists, trust busters, and other American factions suspicious of concentrated industrial power. The muckraker Ida Tarbell's 19-part McClure's Magazine series published in 1904 as the book The History of the Standard Oil Company attacked the corporation's power but acknowledged the strengths of its scientific culture. From the beginning, the Standard Oil Company has studied thoroughly everything connected with the oil business. It has known, not guessed at, conditions. It has had a keen authoritative sight. It has applied itself to its tasks with indefatigable zeal. Bringing order to chaos was the way Rockefeller had once described his monopoly. That ambition had not ebbed within Exxon almost a century later. Tarbell's investigation accelerated a movement to break up Standard Oil on antitrust grounds. By the time the United States Supreme Court ordered the company's dismantlement in 1911, John D. Rockefeller had retired and taken up philanthropy. The largest of the baby standards born from the breakup was Standard Oil of New Jersey. It later marketed itself and its products under the Esso, Enco, and Humble Oil labels before modern branding specialists settled on Exxon in 1973. At the time of the Exxon Valdez spill, the corporation remained by far the biggest oil company in the United States, twice the size of the next largest, Mobil Oil, another baby standard, the successor to Standard Oil of New York. Larger still than Chevron, the successor to Standard Oil of California, and 10 times the size of the Atlantic Richfield Company, initially born of the Standard monopoly as a refiner. Exxon hewed most closely to the Rockefeller inheritance of discipline, rigor, technological research, and unsentimental competition. By the 1990s, there were lots of wrong ways of doing projects, and then there was the Exxon way, as Ed Chow, a longtime Chevron executive, put it. Exxon's managers and engineers were very, very prickly as partners, and they don't like to be partners unless they're the operator, a competing executive said. At industry meetings, the Exxon participants could be easily identified. Conservatively dressed, hairstyles that seemed influenced by military rules, cliquish, secretive, and businesslike. Senior executives who rose through Exxon's ranks reinforced with one another that they served a corporation whose fundamentals traced in important ways all the way back to the founder, as Raymond put it.